I'm lucky. Emily didn't ask me to talk about Buddhism. Now, there are two different things, you know, essence of Buddhism and Buddhism. Because when you talk about Buddhism, it is like talking about crossing a very wide river, right? Maybe the Amazon, right? From one side to the other side is about 10 or 15 miles. And it's very difficult to cover everything in Buddhism. Even universities don't offer a PhD on Buddhism. They got to do on certain aspects of Buddhism. So it's very difficult to talk about Buddhism generally because it makes no meaning. Whereas if you go back to the source and then go right to the beginning, then maybe it makes some sense, right? Because it starts, you know, just tracing the source of a river to when it starts as a trickle, a small little creek, and then as it flows down the track, it gets wider and wider and getting bigger and bigger until it's a big river. So in the case of Buddhism, it's the same. It started off as an idea or teachings of one person. And after that, over the years, people add on to it. They like to add, everybody likes to contribute, as they call it. So they add on, they change here and there, and then things start to change. Instead of getting clear water, like, you know, in the stream, in the creek, in the early stage, when it goes down to the delta of a river, it becomes very muddy. You can also liken Buddhism to a cake. The person who started Buddhism actually baked a nice, beautiful cake. Very tasty, very good. Then as the cake is passed around the generation, everybody say, "Oh, I make it a bit more interesting. So add a little bit of icing, different color, and then make it, you know, thicker icing and so on." Some make it to be very nice. Others, they start to make the thing shaped like a Mickey Mouse. So if you are not careful, when we see the thing, it looks like a Mickey Mouse. And that's precisely what the antagonist of Buddhism tries to tell us. There you are, that religion is a Mickey Mouse religion. If you look at it, it's true. What they say is true. It really looks like a Mickey Mouse. But inside there is this cake. And that cake, original cake, is the essence. It's very beautiful, very tasty. But because of the thick icing we have, you put your hand in there, you never touch the cake at all. You get the icing. Right? And some of the icing can be really sickening in taste. Right? So tonight, I'm going to talk about that cake. So who baked the cake, actually? And why did he bake the cake? I mean, meaning that, why did he has this preach Buddhism? Well, he started off as a normal person. People like you and me. We are all the same, right? Except that he's in a very, very good situation. His father is quite well-to-do. Supposed to be a king, or a king of a small country. I mean, I'm talking historical Buddha. Right? I'm not talking about the Buddha which nowadays people are telling, you know, Buddhas will fly around. Right? My Buddha doesn't fly. So, in his history, it's proven that the Buddha was born as a warrior, in the warrior caste. Right? And he grew up in very favorable surroundings. He was given all the luxuries you get in this world and all this. And more or less like many of you, right? Some of you I know can be born in luxury. Right? So you got everything, and they want a BMW, the father will give him BMW. And some, I want to have a flat near my uni, the father will buy a flat. I know a few who were like that. So anyway, he got almost everything he wanted. But the whole thing is, no matter who you are and what you are, we always have certain things which bites into us. Now for you guys, I know the thing which is a source of problem for you will be sitting for exams and getting your degree. Otherwise you won't be here. And that's a worry sometimes. Then you worry about other things as well. Assuming that you got no money, you're worrying about when to pay the next semester's fee. Assuming you got plenty of money, You're worried about passing the exams. You're worried about having a girlfriend. You're worried about this and that. And when sometimes you're even worried about walking in the streets, when the bus is going to run me down. So these are the sort of things we have. And similarly, the person whom we call Buddha later, or he was a prince, was experiencing it. He's got a good, comfortable surrounding, but unfortunately, he's got all this thing biting at him, making him feel funny about it. So he was trying to get some answers from people around. As usual, you ask the teacher, you ask your friends and all these things, trying to get some ideas about things. But none of them could give him any idea of where all these things come from. He, and in his early adulthood, he met with a few things which he liked to ponder on. One is when he sees a dead person, according to stories. Some is when he saw a sick person, an old person. So these are the physical things. And he says, why must people grow old? I think this is a question everybody asks, especially me. Why should I grow old now? So same thing is, we are going to die one day. Right? But why should I die? And if you ask, why should I fall sick? Everybody falls sick. You all do. And you haven't felt the impact of aging on you yet. But once you reach your peak and then you're going downhill, you know what it's like to grow old. And it's not a very nice thing. So all these things are things which bother us. And he asks his friends, teachers and all this, they give him some funny ideas. They say, oh, it's preordained that you should grow old, preordained that you should die. It's all in the fortune, in the luck. And some people say, oh, don't worry, it's the act of some supernatural gods and all these things, make you die, make you sick. I mean, I'm quite sure a lot of people nowadays still believe in that. Why, being an intelligent person, he could not accept the idea. So there are also other things which bothered him. It's just that when he is with pleasant situation, it's got to change. And then you and I know very well, we've got very pleasant situation, you're enjoying yourself, and then finally the thing's got to come to an end. It's change. We can't have all these good things forever. Same thing is when we meet with something which is, we have got to meet with unhappy things in our life. Maybe you must sit with somebody whom you don't like. You got a lecturer whom you really hate, and yet he's learning the most important subject in your course. Right? So you got to put on with it. But as you go, if you do not know what to do with it, you start to get angry, get upset. Right? And getting upset doesn't really help things. So what we can do is, during his time is nobody gave him the answer. He got really upset with things. He's got a beautiful wife, but he still thinks that there's something more for him. Until he got a son. Then he realized, this little boy is growing up to be like me, getting a lot of problems. So at night, he just left home. He could afford to leave home because his father is quite rich and could support the wife and the children. So he left home and then went to join a group of those holy men. Because holy men are supposed to give answers. Right? Like in the Buddhist, we always consider our monks to be holy men. So you go and see a monk to get some answers. Sometimes they might not be able to give you the answers, but at least you try. Anyway, he went to join these holy people, and he did all sorts of things. During his time, people believed that if you do certain things, you might come to unite with God, right? Or you might find the truth and get rid of your problems. But, of course, it's just something which people think. It might not be true. So what he did was he tried all those things people do. Some of them, they're still done in India nowadays. It's to sit with fire around you, getting the heat, right? Getting all these hot things, and try to sit down and close your eyes and just imagine the gods and all these things. And it's very much like the Bikram yoga you have nowadays. Anybody knows of Bikram yoga? you go in the 45 degree room and you do all sorts of things. Right? And of course, Bikram Yoga tells you that it's good for health. But this one, you do all sorts of things, they tell you it's good for your spiritual advancement. And also there are so many other things like going on fast, starving himself. And they think that by starving yourself, you purify yourself, and then eventually you know the truth. So it's the last thing which he did. He starved himself, he went on a fast, and he grew very thin. And some of you might have seen some of those paintings of the Buddha when he was really very thin. He says he's so thin that when he put his finger on his stomach, he can feel his backbone. Of course, that's an exaggeration, right? But if you starve yourself for a few months, that's what would happen. And when he tried to go and have a wash or have a bath in the river, he nearly drowned. He got up and he says, if I drown, I can't find the truth. So somebody happened to give him some milk and rice. He ate and then got his health back. And it's then he started to think, all those things I've been doing, it's a waste of time. We can still never find the truth. So what he did was, eventually, according to the books, he sat under a tree and he did some contemplation. And because of his past practices he had, actually at one stage he was doing meditation with some of the very famous and good meditation masters in his time. But he didn't learn, he learned as much as he could, but still didn't get the answer. So what he did was, he sat under the tree and he calmed his mind down and his mind just opened up. And then he started to realize the truth. Right? And there's no point and the truth he discovered actually is very simple. He says, life is full of suffering, number one. The second one is, he also realized that, where does this suffering come from? Instead of blaming it on God or some other things, he says, well, it's because of my own self. This is where Buddhism is very important. It places the responsibility on that person. Now, what is this person I call me? It's just the mind and the body reacting. Our life is acting and reacting with each other. And because of that, we generate a lot of action, activities, which causes a lot of problem. So the third one, he realizes, if I were to be able to gain control of the mind, let the mind be free of all these things, then there'll be a stage where I purify myself and I'll get rid of all the suffering I have. And the fourth one is, he realizes also that it's got to do with your lifestyle, the way you think. So that's what he discovered. He didn't invent all these things. Buddhism wasn't invented. Neither did the Buddha wake up one fine morning and say, I should go there and make life miserable for those people. You don't drink, you don't commit adultery and all these things. Right? So he realized that. Then that way or the path he formulated, which came to him, became the path which is common to all Buddhists over the ages. So after he has found all these things, he started to teach. So I recommend you to read some Buddhist stories. You know what it is, but I'm giving you the essence, the story, just a short thing about it. Because I tell you the life history of the Buddha, it takes about 5 days. Okay. Then, after he realized this truth, he went around to teach. He met with some old friends, then he taught them. Then after teaching, they got the same idea as he. And that's what the Buddhists call being enlightened. It's not a big thing. Enlightened is to get your mind to understand the facts of life and understand the way that you can get out of it, of the suffering. It's a very simple thing, actually. But unfortunately, further down the track, it gets more and more difficult because people make it very difficult. And I'll talk more about this path a bit later on. So when he converted a few people to his way of thinking, then he started a community. And then they went in various ways to teach other people. So that's the beginning of the teaching of Buddhism. Buddha did not start Buddhism. He just passed down a whole lot of thinking, a whole lot of teachings. He went around, and after that, he started to have this this group of people who want to follow his way. The way the Buddha lived was quite simple. As a teacher, he doesn't have all the pomp and ceremony of all of other religious leaders. It's very simple. You look at him, look at the history. He owns only three robes. He's got a begging bowl. And in the early stage, he never lived in houses. They live only in trees, caves, and all this. As you can see in the early Buddhist scripture, it tells you that. And then they don't even have a kitchen. And not just with his food. Every morning, he'll go down to the village because he got to live near a village. So he goes to the village with his bowl, and the villagers will fill some food in the bowl. And by in the morning, by 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, if the bowl was filled, he goes back to his tree or his cave, and he starts eating. Then spends the whole afternoon meditating or teaching. People in the village who has got any needs will come and ask him for advice. So this starts the good Buddhist tradition. We tend to think that the monks and the nuns are very far removed from us. They live in the monastery, like they've got nothing to do with us. But actually, during the Buddha's day, the monks and nuns, they actually go together with the people. The customs during the time was the monks and nuns, laymen and the laywomen, they form into a group called the Four Assemblies. And the Buddha did not really want the monks and nuns to live away from people. That's why he made it a point that the monks and nuns will have to go every morning into the villages to be given food. Right? So they make sure that the monks and nuns depend on the lay people for their material needs. Right? That goes with other things as well, the robes. Right? Every year after the rains or after the rainy season, people will start giving the monks and nuns robes. Right? They go, but they either get from pieces of cloth to be sewn together and so on. Right? And then they give offer to the monks. The Buddha also made it a point that the monks and nuns should not own material things other than a few things. The bowl, of course, which is made of, during the Buddha's time, made of earthenware. The ropes, three changes of ropes, one to keep, one to wear, and one in the wash. So, and then, of course, the razors, the knife for keeping the hair short, and things like that. Very few possessions. All the monk's possession can be put into a little bag and carried around. If you go to Thailand nowadays, you can still see that, especially among the forest monks. And all these possessions, the lay people give to the monk every year, once a year. Give food to them, medicines, and also what we call the bedding materials. Right? During the Buddha's time, it's very simple. There's no thick mattress and things, and no king's bed, king-size bed and all this. What they do is they just give them some straw, and that's what the monks sleep on. And these are the things which the lay people support the monk and nuns. And in return, the monks and nuns will give guidance to the lay people. There's a lot of record in the scripture to say that when somebody is getting very sick and wanting to cannot die, say, go and invite some monks over and come and talk the Dharma to me. So the monks will come and talk about impermanence to those people. And then possibly the fellow will die in a much comfortable way. So, and also these monks, they are organized in such a way that they help each other so that they can gain enlightenment to be like the Buddha. Now, this thing has been going on for years, for over the ages. And as it moves from place to place, as the time changes, as the place changes, then people add on to it. At first, there's only one kind of Buddhism. Now, as he goes on from one part of India to the other, the people start to change a little bit of the rules, people start to change a bit of the teachings, and then eventually it spreads out. Then you, coming to this time, when you get all the muddy water from the clear water, you find that it's Chinese Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, everything, right? And in Tibetan Buddhism, they got this, what, four branches or six branches, or you know, it becomes very, very confusing. So for modern day people, it's really extremely difficult to find out what it really is. I've been told that I'm not a Buddhist because I went to a certain monastery, I didn't go and knock the bell. So I'm not a good Buddhist. So I told them, what do you know about Buddhism? And a lot of things we will tell you. Usually, I was told also that I'm not a good Buddhist because I don't have my restricted diet. I'm not a vegetarian, so therefore I cannot be a good Buddhist. All these things coming in, and then they tell you all these things, and you find that it's very confusing. So in order to stop being confused, I would suggest that we go back to the early stages, when the thing is still very simple. And Buddhism is actually very, very simple. The intention of the Buddha is not to start a religion. He never, never wanted to start a religion. What he wanted to do is to change the mentality of human beings in such a way that they can come to terms with the life and try to avoid a lot of situations which will cause them problems. And you and I got problems. Only thing that a lot of us do not know how to deal with the problem. So if you look at the teachings, it's very simple. Very, very simple. When you know that you got problems, what to do in the first place? Number one, identify the problems. Okay, problems, all these things, we identify our problems. Number two is know where the problems come from. Now, unfortunately, this is the most difficult question. Because we always look outwards. There's one nun who told us, says, the trouble with us is our eyes goes outward, therefore everything is from outside. We always look at our problem is given by somebody. This fella gave me this problem, that fella gave me this problem. And this situation gave me the problem. But if we were to turn our eyes inward and look inwards, then we can understand that this problem won't come from people. Why do I have to quarrel with you? Because I always think you are the one who give me the problem, therefore I got to quarrel with you. So it's this acting, reacting. Now, supposing if I can't ask you to stop, short of murdering you, if I murder you, I got more problems. So what I can do is, I stop myself getting the problem to go further. Supposing if you say something horrible, which I don't like to hear, what can I do? A lot of Buddhists will tell you, just walk away from the thing. That's one of the ways, right? But that's not the ideal way. The way the Buddha was teaching us is, know that he's talking to you. Understand what he's talking, but don't react inside you. So can you do that or not? Now, that's the difficult part we are getting. Right? Suppose you call me and Jim, you're a bloody fool, you know, stupid idiot and all these things. Right? First thing is, my reaction is what? How dare you say that? I'm not a fool, I'm not stupid. I'm cleverest man on earth. Right? So from there, I start to get that reaction within me. And then after that, it comes from the mouth, I say something to you. And that provokes you to say something more to me. So supposing I got a skill of saying that, I'm not going to react. Nothing happens. Right? Now, therefore, the skill is not reacting. It's not so easy. And what we can do is train ourselves. Like the training is very, very important. Train yourself not to react. Now, what the Buddha taught in the scripture is, not in order not to react, you know a few things. What is states are only word. What is sin are only things. What is hear are only object of sounds. What is smell are only smell. What it tastes is only taste. What we feel in our body is just body feelings. These are the few things. Unfortunately, with us, the mind does not allow us to think that way. That is called an unruly mind. All our mind is the same. We act and react, act and react. Then we get frustrated, we get angry, we get upset. Then towards the end of the day, you lie on your bed, you can't sleep. So these are the sort of things which the Buddha has found out. And the Buddha taught us, go there and be aware of things. So the second noble truth is, know that this is our activities of the mind and the body. When you see something, we always react. What are the reaction possible, the possible reactions you can have? Right? Three possible reactions. One is, that thing is good, pleasant. The other thing is, that thing is unpleasant. Or the other one is, you see, no, it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Right? These are only three results you can get. Right? So, if we can be able to catch the moment when this thought arises, then, and not to continue on with it, then you'll be all right. Now, once I had an argument with somebody and became very heated. Very heated argument. I can see that I'm boiling there and he's boiling even more than I'm boiling. So it's all inside there. And all of a sudden I realize, you know, if we go on with this argument, I'm going to lose a friend. So what I do is just finish off in mid-air. Halfway through, he says something, no reaction. Just smile at the fella. Then he says, what happened to you? Now, when you don't react, you are not feeling the situation. Right? So this is the way the Buddha taught us. Right? This action and reaction. Because with this body and the mind, we generate a thing called karma. Right? Karma is a deed. When you start to think about something, there's an intention of doing something, you do something. So that is the sort of thing, karma. And for most of us, the karma, which is generated out of three things, greed, hatred, and delusion. Of course, some other teachers will talk about this, greed, hatred, and delusion. Are you going to have that? When sailing across the sea of suffering, maybe you touch it. Okay. So anything which comes out of greed, hatred, and delusion generates bad karma. Bad karma meaning unfavorable results which brings harm to you and others. And usually, the harm comes to you first. Supposing somebody was saying something to me and I react, say things I don't like to hear, and the fellow was saying something, then what happens? I get angry, I get upset, and I can see that I'm suffering first. The first sufferer is always you, right? The first person. Then only we make other people suffer. Right? So in other words, we harm ourselves first before we can harm other people. And sometimes the harm to ourselves is even worse than the harm we give to other people. It's a very subtle thing. And therefore, if you are wise enough, you start to think, why should I harm myself? If you stop from harming yourself, then you won't harm other people. So, all these things, if we talk about this harm, this problems and all this, the Buddhists have got a word for it. It's called dukkha. Dukkha meaning, it's got a lot of translation, suffering, ill, unsatisfactoriness, everything of that nature. When you are not happy with things, there's dukkha. When you are in pain, there's dukkha. And a lot of this dukkha can be avoided. But we seem not to be aware of the fact that they can be avoided. So we keep on going in our life. And that's why the Buddha talk says that you're always turning around in this world of suffering, in samsara. That's one word, samsara. You go round and round in suffering. There's a lot of Buddhists who say, you're being reborn one way or other. When we saw a reborn, we always think of what? go there. This life, I'm born as Jim. Next life, I'm born as a cockroach. Next life, I'm born as a chicken and all this. It may not be that. It's just that the rebirth you have will be in this life. Right? One moment is like that, the other moment like that, the other moment like that. Right? So this sort of things, we keep on creating problem after problem. Unhappiness after unhappiness. Unsatisfactoriness after unsatisfactoriness. And of course, the Buddha knew that there's a way out of it. That's one. And possibly that's the only way. The only way to get out of it is to get rid of your causes. The cause is what? Your mind and your body. Of course, you can't get rid of them. When you get rid of them, you're dead. Right? So the other causes is greed, hatred, and delusion. So this greed and hatred are all in us. We like to have something nice. We don't like to have something unpleasant. So these are all the things which are making us run. So the Buddha tried to get rid of this. But unfortunately, it's quite difficult. Right? But the Buddha said, didn't say that you should get rid of this straight away. Right? Not overnight. Not that you just listen to Dharma talk and then say, I'm going to be a good Buddhist, so I get rid of my greed, hatred, and delusion. Right? It takes a while. And it's only through training. Right? In Buddhism, the training is training of yourself, the first person thing. You cannot train on behalf of other people. Right? It's just like, you know, if you want to get a suntan, you don't say, Jim, take your clothes off and sit under the sun so that you get suntan. Or you're hungry, you don't say, Jim, here's a bowl of rice, you eat it so that I can be full. You must do everything yourself. That's law. That's nature. So as you go on doing that, we must do it ourselves. And doing it entails a few things. It entails the bringing up of the wisdom which we have. This wisdom. Now, wisdom of what is what? Wisdom is to understand this law of nature. Where we get our suffering from, knowing that and this great hatred, delusion, and all these things, try to understand them. Right? And the Buddha's way of getting wisdom is not through prayers, not through telling all the gods in the world that, you know, I'm your servant and all this thing to get the wisdom. It's for you to do it through mental training. And the mental training involves a few things. Right? If one does not know what the truths are, right, you cannot do the training. If you don't know the method, you cannot do the training. Right? If you don't actually do it after knowing all these things, you cannot do the training either. So in other words, you look at when the Buddha talks about wisdom, there are three levels of wisdom. Right? One is the wisdom which is derived from hearing and reading. You attend Dharma talks, yeah. And you leave that, and when you leave this one, forget about Dharma talk, doesn't work. So then you go, you bring some books home, read, it makes a lot of sense. If you do nothing about it, nothing works. Okay? So that's the first level of wisdom. We say about something which is learned. Right? Then sometimes, that when you say yeah, because we are intelligent people. We read something, we hear something, you know that, that makes sense. That's the second level of wisdom. It makes sense. Right? And once it makes sense, you go to the third. That is to follow the direction. Right? Now, it's just like, how many of you have bought a washing machine before? A fridge? Whatever. Right? Or maybe the knockdown furniture you get from IKEA. You come, a nice, beautiful table, right? They show on the photograph a nice table, right? But when you go there, they give you a box. You take home. Right? You take home. Now, while you are looking at the thing, you say, this is a beautiful table. Right? I see the thing, the fellow explained to you, that it's got four legs, now very stout, very strong, and all this thing. So that's the first level. And the second level is taking out the direction and read. right, and say, okay, you know, it makes sense, you know, A goes to B, B goes to C. Right? If you stop there, you will never get a table. It will still be in the box. Right? So what you got to do is take the table out, assemble the thing yourself, and then you get a table. Similarly, in the Buddhist teachings, you want to get you want to get the enlightenment like him, you've got to do that. Listen, learn, and then give it a thought. Then after that, do the thing. If you buy a table, and there's this direction there, you chant the direction. Right? A to B, B to C, take the screw A and put in screw B and all these things. You chant the thing, and then after that, you put the whole box on the table and pray to it every day. You never get the table. So this is what happens with a lot of schools of Buddhism. We are not talking about this praying and all these things. It's a matter of following the wise advice the Buddha gives us. It's a matter of going into this, getting wisdom. And in order to get wisdom, there are a few things which we have got to follow. It's called the Eightfold Path. The top of it is wisdom. Then, with this wisdom, there are two parts of it. One is the way, you know, we try to have understanding of things. And the Buddha called it right understanding. Try to understand about the nature of us. Right? What is this? Our deeds and all these things. What we do and what is the results of it. Then the other one is right thoughts. Giving this idea a resolve within you to say, I'm going to do it. And try to avoid doing a lot of evil things. Then from there, we can start to look into the other aspect of it too. In order to start ourselves, now we can see the Buddha on one hand, on one side of it, it says, oh, live a proper life, a life which is free of blame. To put it in modern day terms, we call it morality or ethics, right? Being ethical with your ways, try not to cause harm to other people. Right? And the basic Buddhist things about talking about harm will be five of those things, which we call the five precepts. Like we try not to kill, we try not to steal, we try not to commit adultery, we try not to tell lies and saying things which are harmful to other people. And of course, the fifth one usually is the most difficult to keep, that is keeping away from alcohol. Right? In Australia, everywhere you go, there's alcohol everywhere. So, but the thing is, you got to look at it. Why the first four? The first four is that physical thing you should be avoiding. This first four will make sure that we live in harmony with our society, in the community. That we don't do things which cause harm to them. If we don't steal the things, we don't kill those people, we don't run away with the husbands or wife, if we don't tell lies to them, it'd be very nice, wouldn't it? The community will be very stable, will be very, very harmonious. And the fifth one, actually, to refrain from intoxicating things, is just that intoxication will take away our wisdom, take away our sane thinking. People who are drunk will kill. People who are drunk will steal. People who are drunk will having sex with other people's husband or wife. People who are drunk will tell a lot of things, say things which are not true. So, the five basic precepts of the Buddha is to avoid doing all these things. And when we start to avoid doing all these things, then you find that the community lives harmoniously, and you are removing one of the stresses you have in life. Right? And then, of course, there are other things which they talk about, you know, occupations and all this. Now that's for your own personal thing. You won't live in guilt. You won't live in stress and all this. Now, there are other aspects of it. In order not to do all these things, in order to gain wisdom, there's another very important part of Buddhism. That is the mental training, the mental culture. This mental culture involves some really big commitment. The commitment for the Buddhists is what we call the right effort. Right? Because the Buddha knows that we've got two natures. One, so-called good nature, the other one, the evil nature. The evil nature being that, you know, we can be selfish, we can do all sorts of harmful things to other people. The good nature is we can also, at the same time, do something which is beneficial to others. So, the Buddha tells us, look at this two good, look at this nature, good and bad. Try to get rid of this bad nature. Try to not allow any non-existing bad nature arising in you. The other one is the effort to continue doing your good nature and also bring out this good nature which you haven't have yet. So there's a resolution to do that. And after that, you start to look into the mental side of it through our mindfulness. And mindfulness is actually very, very important in Buddhism. You can say, you know, all these things come to the essence, and the essence of the essence is mindfulness. Mindfulness makes us aware of things going around. You and I are mindful of things, otherwise you won't live to this age. Okay? If you are not mindful of where you're walking, the bus have taken you away. Right? If you go to the walk along the cliff, you're not mindful, there's a big drop of 100 meters, you'll be dead under the cliff. Right? There are a lot of people who die that way. Right? So this mindfulness we have, ordinary mindfulness, that makes us be aware of things, right? Aware of danger, aware for our survival and all this. When mindful is, you can be mindful of what you're eating as well. Otherwise, you eat a lot of things, then you get some disease, and then it might kill you, might make you sick. Okay? So these are the mindfulness which we already have. But that sort of mindfulness the Buddha talked about is not that, just this mindfulness. That mindfulness is to know what is happening in your mind at any time. We sometimes have got an idea about it, but not all the time. In fact, most of the time, we do not know what our mind is thinking. We seem to be guided by the autopilot. It's by nature, therefore, I must get angry when the fellow does this to me. I must get upset when the thing is not happening to my liking. So these are the way we bring about things. We are also not mindful about our action and reaction. Sometimes, you know, maybe not you, but you look at your friends, when they get really angry, they are not being mindful, isn't it? But if you tell them, hey, don't get angry, what happens? They get angrier still. Yeah. So, this is the thing. Now, what the Buddha is trying to teach us is, when you're angry, know that you're getting angry. In fact, try to know that when the anger starts. Say, getting angry, for all of us, is not just, it comes out like that. There's no spontaneous fire. It starts off a little spark. Right? From the spark, it started off a little burning thing. And then after that, it burns a bit more. It burns a bit more, then it becomes a big fire. But we just don't see it that way. Because it happens in a very short time. So you see, until you get angry, there you are. The fire goes very fast. Right? It's just an explosion. So the Buddha was trying to tell us that mindfulness is to watch that beginning of the explosion. What caused the explosion? And when you start to be mindful about those things, then we can prevent the explosion. You know that when I start looking at this, Chinese tea. I don't drink Chinese tea. I drink only Lipton tea. It must have sugar in it. No sugar, no milk. Ellen, what happened? So this is the sort of the way we react, right? But if I were to be more mindful, just look at it. Tea. Finish. I'll drink the tea. I may like milk tea, I may like sugar tea, but if whatever tea it is, it's meant for me to stop my thirst, therefore, it's good. So there's no problem. Then after drinking the tea, I thank Alan, rather than blaming him for giving me the tea which I don't like. See how easy it is. But how many of us do put the restrictions on ourselves not to do it? So that is where we look into this one aspect of how we look into mindfulness. Now, there's a prolonged teachings in the scripture. In many parts of the scripture, the Buddha talk about it. Mindful of what? I talk about mindful of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what the body feels, and what you think. These are the mindfulness which you've got to look into it. All the time, because other than that, There's not, no other things other than that. These are the six bases which you receive all the signals. And then when you receive the signals, it happens. Right? It goes around. You have got this sensation, then you start to have ideas about it. Then you have got the notion, and so on. It falls into the thing, and it makes us act. Right? So, a clear mind will be able to see the thing as it develops. Right? Initially, the training is not about being able to see all those things. You just see as it comes. Catch it at any time. So this mindfulness is very important. Actually, you look at mindfulness, and if you go further in the teachings of Buddha, you find that mindfulness is in all the training towards enlightenment. No mindfulness, no enlightenment. That's why we have a saying, you, no matter how much you pray to the Buddha, you can never get enlightened, unless you follow his words. So, this is a very important thing. Now, when you're mindful, you are mindful of us generating good and bad karma. Now, of course, you don't see good and bad in Buddhism because good and bad can be relative, right? It's very objective, subjective. We can say that wholesome and unwholesome karma. Wholesome meaning that it brings about benefit to you and others. Unwholesome, it means harm to you and others. So we try to, when we can see this within us, when we generate unwholesome karma, then at least we can put a stop to it. Or when we see us generating wholesome karma, we can push more to it, do more about it. So in other words, you look at it, the Buddha talk about this being moral, having good ethics and all this. It's part and parcel of the training. And you cannot be moral or having good ethics without being mindful. We've got to be mindful that we are breaking the precepts. We've got to be mindful that, I feel like killing. I feel like killing that fella. Now, when you start to have this idea, one fighter, you're going to kill the fella. Same thing, you know, when you look at the chicken, I love this chicken so much. I'm going to kill the chicken to eat. I'm not encouraging you guys to be a vegetarian, but this is the way we do. Same thing is, you know, when you talk about taking things from other people, like these morals in the Buddhism. You see something, well, let's put it this way. What makes a person want to steal? Like what makes you want to steal? I look at it, right? So now, looking at it, it comes with contact. Then my mind starts to work, right? I perceive this to be something. Right? Then I have a closer look at it. It is whatever is this? iPhone. Okay, this is an iPhone. Right? And now iPhone is big in the market, right? I love it. I like the color also. Then I ask, will you give it to me? Of course, you know, that's being civil, you see. Then you say, no, it's my personal thing. I say, okay, don't worry. So keep on looking at it, keep liking it. See the desire, one thing. Then eventually, I get the intention of wanting to have it as mine. So regardless, you know, you won't give me, never mind. And when the moment your back is turned, I put it in my pocket. So it became mine. That's the process of stealing. Sometimes you steal when there's no need for it because of our greediness. But there are other times when people steal because of, you know, they're stealing food and all these things because they're hungry. But, well, the Buddha said try not to do any of them. Because what happens when we try to steal? When I try to pinch this and put in my pocket, what happens up here? I'm so scared that you might see me. I know I put in my pocket, and after that you say, you might think that I've stolen the thing. Actually, I have. But you might think that I've stolen the thing. You might go and tell my friends that I've stolen the thing. Even though I've stolen the thing, and I still don't want other people to hear it. So all these things are pulling my mind apart. And that itself is dukkha or suffering. So we avoid doing all these things. You know, okay, your iPhone, I got an old-fashioned phone, still good. So, whatever it is, you got a nice watch, it's nice, but it's not mine. So don't take it. So this is the way we develop our ethics. It's not that, no, the Buddha didn't put a rule book and say, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that, and shouldn't do that. If you look closely at our precepts in Buddhism, It tells you, I undertake the training not to. Right? So you train yourself. And then when we start to see what happens when we steal, what happens when we tell lies, right? What happens when we slander or gossip and all this thing, what happens? Sometimes, you know, when we gossip, we feel very good about it, isn't it? But later on, when somebody finds out, you get a problem. So, what he says, the first part of the Buddhist teaching is to avoid this problem. The second part is to look closely into this problem and understand it so that you don't have to do it. And when we see all these things clearly, then we are close onto the path which the Buddha wants us. We'll talk about nirvana and all this. They're nothing but words. But when you start to work in such a way that you are free of greed, hatred, and delusion at any moment, that's the time when you really have a glimpse of enlightenment. So, this is the way the Buddha has asked us to do our personal training. Right now, after this personal training, what happens? You find that when we are not attached to things, when we do not act or react unfavorably to things, we develop the sort of levelness of the mind. The mind becomes very level. We can make judgments a lot easier. We can think a lot better. You don't have so much problems and so on. In fact, if you are perfect like the Buddha, you got no problems at all. You look at the history of the Buddha, there are times when people say bad things about him. You just say, okay, he said bad things about me. That's all. He never cursed people. Never say, may God punish you. Nothing of the sort. So, we, as Buddhists, we try to be like that. Try to be like the Buddha. You find that in the scripture, sometimes the Buddha calls somebody a fool. You fool, you said the wrong thing, I didn't say these sort of things. So, why did the Buddha call him a fool? Because he was really a fool. Sometimes we call people fool because we don't like the person. But the Buddha call a person a fool is because that person is really a fool. So these are the different things. Now, when you start doing all these things, it's easier for us to be kind to other people. If you look at the defilement, get rid of defilement, then try to bring out the goodness in us, then that's the time when we start to bring out all this goodness in us. And the goodness comes in three forms in Buddhism. Number one is we can be friendly with others, be kind to other people, and real kindness. That's what we call metta, and it's translated to English as loving kindness. That sort of kindness where there is no barrier. It doesn't mean that I'm kind to A better than B. I'm kind to everybody who needs this kindness. We understand them well. We get along well with them. This is part and parcel of the loving kindness. Right now, I'm quite sure among us, you know, I like A better than B, B better than C. And then when it comes to things, I treat A better than B and B better than C. But if you really have a perfect loving kindness, there's no such thing as A or B or C. All human beings are the same. Whether you're male, female, old, young, you still get the same kindness. The other one which you can develop will be the compassion. This compassion is not the sense of pity. A lot of times we think that compassion is when you see somebody who has broken a leg. What do we do always? Oh, you poor thing. You broke a leg. So that's not really compassion. That's just pitying people. The real compassion is, you look at it, he broke a leg. I know how much pain the fellow is suffering. Then, the next thing is, can I help you or not? Then do something. And all these things, when you do something good to people, we are not there to really get something back. Now, it's very common for a lot of us to want something back when we do something. Supposing, you know, it's your birthday, I buy a big present for you, and I put a big card there, and I put in front of you. Now, this is the way of giving, usually. You know, I bought this on David Jones. Very expensive, you know. $200 it cost me. Then you take the present, right? You open up, and say, oh, that's all. Don't even say thank you. So I got upset, right? Because I want to fish your good feelings to me. I give you the things, you must say thank you to me and say how much I appreciate your presence and all these things. Right? If it's not forthcoming, then I get upset. Then I go back. I think to myself, oh, that fellow is so ungrateful. Give all the best things, no? And still not a single word of thanks. So these are the sort of things, no? we normally do. And we are not doing kind things. We are not being kind to other people. So what you do is, you got to know, if I were to give you something, that's the thing, I give it to you. And whether you say thank you or not, don't worry. Whether you like me or not, don't worry. You see, in the normal way of doing kindness, we are actually putting in a hook with the things. Right? Just like fishing. You put a worm there, catch the fish. So when we are being kind, that thing is our hook and the worm. Right? I want to get you to think good of me. Now, this is what the Buddha says. This is not real kindness. The real kindness is to be able to give and not taking it back. Right? And that becomes what we say the Buddhist kind of generosity. Right? Dana. Now, if you, for you, those of you who has given food to monks in the temple, you know that when they put the food in the bowl of the monk, he never say thank you. Because that's not what you should be expecting. What you should do with the thing is, I give this food to the monk so that he can keep himself healthy. And then he eats it, and that's it. But sometimes you go even more than that. You give the food to the monk, then I need to have 2 credit points in the next life. For me, I give a nice, beautiful vegetarian curry to the monk. If the monk likes it, I get a very good reward for me later on. Right? So we are always trying to do that. But when the Buddhists look about doing all these kind deeds, we don't really want something back. So, of course, there's belief in that, which comes later on, doing merits and all these things. It's not a bad thing to do, but it shouldn't be the sole thing we do for. You find that even helping people, helping a lady cross a road, helping somebody, you know, somebody drops a coin and he can't bend to pick up, you pick it up and give it to him. That is good deeds, being kind. And unfortunately, in a lot of Buddhist culture, that sort of thing has disappeared completely. So we should try to do all these things. And I think, I just suggest, one of the best things is to smile. Smiling is actually free. And I read in one of the things, when you smile, you tense up less muscles. And actually smiling in a nice and... No, don't smile like a clown, of course. Ordinary smile. When you see somebody, you make eye contact and smile at them. Actually, it lifts up it brings in something fresh to them. And that happens years ago. I realized that I wouldn't have been having been smiling and started to develop a lot of wrinkles. Wrinkles at about 40 or 50 years old is not a good thing. So I decided, you know, what to do. I said, go and smile. So I went to George Street, smile. I meet somebody, I smile. And then usually when you smile at people, they smile back at you. And you know, if you smile, that sort of thing which happens in you, it brings up your sort of, lifts up your spirits. And you smile at other people, it lifts up their spirits too. And a few of them, you know, people who walk in George Street, sometimes they carry this briefcase, they'll be thinking about things, all worries and all this. You smile at them, they smile back at you, and some even say good morning to you. And so it's very nice. And of course, there'll be about 10 or 15% of those people. There's one lady I smile at, and then she grabbed her handbag and walked the other way. But of course, there's this sort of things which we got to face. You want to do good things, you come with the bad things. But I was thinking 85% against 15% is good. So this is, you see, a free thing, and yet we withhold from giving other people. That is kind feelings. So later on, I talked to my friend and said, no, you know, smile and all this. He says, but Jim, you must remember, when you smile, your heart must smile as well. If your heart don't smile, you smile this artificial false smile. I said, don't worry. If I keep smiling, my heart eventually smiles. You see, that's how you generate the goodness within you. But just because of certain things, we hold on this back. Right? We do not want to be generous. And one of the training of Buddhism is this generosity. Generous in our material thing. It's not that you must give everything away, but when you can afford it, just give away something. Right? When somebody is in need of a drink, give them a drink. When somebody is in need of food, give them a food if they can't afford it. Right? So, and you keep on doing that, you find that you have time to do service to other people. And being kind to people is one of the services we can provide. Just be kind to a friend when they're in the time of trouble. Even when they're happy, just be kind to them. Slowly, as you keep yourself learning, give the best kindness of all. Give them Dhamma. The Buddha Dhamma is one of the biggest gifts you can give. In the Dhammapada, it says, the gift of truth or the gift of the Dhamma excels all gift. Now, in that, in the sense that when people are in trouble, they need the Dhamma. This Dhamma is not only meant for Buddhists. It works as a universal thing. When people are angry, you tell them to stop anger, it's not Dhamma. Stop getting angry is Dhamma. When they're angry, you know them, support them, is Dhamma. Understand them is Dhamma. Then eventually, if you can change the nature for them not to get angry, is Dhamma. And slowly bring them in. I got a lot of people who talk about Dhamma means to pull them to the temple, pray. That's Dhamma. Let me be part of the Dhamma. But it's not all of it. All of it is to develop understanding to others and understanding of yourself. Understanding the nature we work. So I'm not, as you can see, this, the last nearly hour I've been talking, not the standard Buddhism as you find in textbooks. I didn't tell you that the Buddha said Four Noble Truths. Number one, dukkha, suffering. Number two, causes of suffering. Number three, cessation of suffering. Right? Then after the Pali there, dukkha samudaya, dukkha nirodha, and then the astanga magga. I never say that. It's just the way. So Buddhism is not something like a rule book you follow. As you go on, you discover. As you hear more Dhamma, you discover. Right? To us, Buddhist is a discovery. Right? When you start to walk the path, it's a discovery. You discover something, not outside, inside here. And the one inside here, there are a lot of things for us to discover. When you go into mindfulness training, concentration training, you can see a lot of things, or you can perceive a lot of things, or feel a lot of things which you have never done before. Look into your mind. Understand the mind. And that's why nowadays we encourage people to do meditation. Meditation, of course, has been there for as much as long as there is Buddha's teaching. But from time to time, it gets popular, it goes away, and then after that, it's almost lost. And then you find that some very good teachers will come up with it again. They go back to the scripture and so on. Now, in modern day, we have got so many different meditation traditions. And sometimes you will be at a crossroads and to know which is which. Maybe you go today to this meditation, they tell you something. That one, they tell you another thing. But if you want to really go into meditation, it's good to go something which is in line with the Buddha's advice. Try to develop your mindfulness. So, to develop a mindfulness, you've got to find, okay, we got to observe the mind, we got to investigate the mind, and eventually we understand how the mind works. Now we understand the mind works is very superficial. But if you start to observe the mind to see, what makes me do this, or what is this, then after that, what is the cause of this? Then after that, you understand, if I do this, I'll get this. If I do this, it comes this. Right? And eventually, it might become clearer. And when the mind becomes clearer, then you can say, I want to stop it. Now no point telling you to stop all these things, because you can't stop. When you start to develop the clarity of thinking, then at least you say, I know I'm angry, I want to stop being angry. Halfway through your anger, you stop. And that itself changes that person. If you talk at it if you want to talk about this essence of Buddhism, that's what it is. The cake, that's what it is. Teaches you to change your personality. A personality of somebody who is very prone to unsatisfactoriness, prone to suffering and all this, change over to one who is free of this unsatisfactoriness. And sometimes, you know, people ask me, what happens if I don't have desire? I can't do anything. Well, you haven't reached the stage yet. You don't know. What happens if I don't have hatred? A lot of people tell me, if I don't get angry, I cannot get action done. But it's a very simple thing. It's right or not? You think? Some people don't care about you. Go and get angry. They're like, oh, yes, what do you want? When you get angry, who gets burned first? So this is the sort of thing. That's why Buddhism is a very first-person thing. Don't go and teach your boyfriend or girlfriend or your father or your mother and all these things. If they are ready, tell them. That's why Buddhism is like that. We are not a religion which goes knocking at people's door and saying, come out, I'm going to teach you Buddhism. People who are ready, they'll accept it. People who are not ready will never accept it. And if you teach Buddhism to people who are not ready, you get a lot of problem. Not them. Okay, so any questions so far? Okay, to sum up, I better put on the board. To sum up, we got the Four Noble Truths. Right? You can read from the books. All these books will tell you Four Noble Truths, which is very basic. And then we talk about this Eightfold Path. Which is also the most popular subject. Keep your precepts, you know, do this, do that. Then you have got also the three levels of wisdom. The first level would be the learned wisdom, then reflected wisdom, experiential wisdom. Well, this is very important, right? You hear Dharma talks and all these things, you read books, this is the first level. When you say it makes sense and all these things, that's another level. When it makes sense, then you say, okay, I'm going to do it. You're coming to this third level. When you start to do it, now, this experiential wisdom goes into going back to the Eightfold Path. Right? So you got to go into mental training or mental culture. And look into wisdom and then ethics. So in the books, they always put it as sila, samadhi, and panya. So these are the things you develop. And this one is the Eightfold Path. And very important of all this mental training will be mindfulness. This mindfulness is to bring about your awareness. Right? And going through the observation of the workings of the mind, then we have got investigation, then the understanding. Again, when you reach the understanding, this is wisdom and experiential wisdom. It comes as a result of that. Right. And of course, the other things we've got to look into will be our generosity. Right. Then, from there, we develop other things such as the karma, the metta, loving kindness, compassion,
mudita is joy. Now this mudita is the absence of a lot of things like competition spirit and so on. You feel happy when others are happy. Because compassion is when you know that people are sad, you know how much sadness they are. Joy is when you feel happy, they're happy. When they're happy, you're happy. Like, just like when you go and celebrate with people genuinely, like, not without jealousy. So this mudita gets rid of one of the big things, not joy, jealousy. Then you get equanimity. That is the levelness of thinking. And this equanimity, it's got to do with expansion wisdom, and to do with all this wisdom. Right? So it becomes very level. Things happening, we don't get upset. Things don't happen to what we like, we don't get upset. Thing happens to what we like, we know that we are happy, but don't get too affected by it. So this is essentially, this is what is the very core of Buddhist teachings, the essentials of Buddhist teachings. There's nothing more about that. The others which a lot of traditions do, they are just the specialty of the tradition. It's all a lot to do with devotions and things like that. So that, or sometimes, you know, we follow it because of culture, we follow it because we like to do it. And sometimes we do it because we are not yet enlightened. We still got this ignorance in us. I tell you a story about this. How this ignorance. Some of you may have heard this story before. When I was at high school, when we take our HSC, you come from Asia, we are quite superstitious, you see. You go to the temple, you pray to the Buddha, and then all these things, expect to do all these good things. And there's there's a belief at the time, propagated by a lot of these adults. They tell us if you go and pray to the Bodhi tree. You know, in a lot of temples in Malaysia, they got this Bodhi tree. So if you walk three rounds down the Bodhi tree and make aspiration, and then after that, you go and tie a rock, a stone, on the branch of the Bodhi tree. Don't try it, don't try it. You tie a stone on the Bodhi tree. Then you make a wish to say that if I pass my exams very well, I will be very grateful. So now that's the thing involved. After you pass your exams, if you really pass your exams, then you take and do the string and the stone, and then you offer a bottle of milk, pour into the root of the Bodhi tree, because that's customary. Because your wish is granted, and you are so grateful that you give milk, which is to a lot of Southeast Asian, they are very nutritious thing. So, of course, ideally, passed my exams, ideally went over to take away the thing and put milk. And we are quite happy. And a few years later, there happened to be a big crop of very good HSC results, you see. And then happens, the Bodhi tree nearly died. Everybody go and tie the thing. And then after that, they took the thing out, everybody put a bottle, and some, this thing, I put a bigger bottle, the better. So, point. And you know, those of you who know what plants are like, right? Because that milk, when it ferments, it makes the soil acid, and then it nearly killed the tree. So, again, you see, this sort of things, you know, sometimes we do out of ignorance. And again, when I was a young man, just started my job, I got a very good, comfortable job. So I bought a new car. So I drove straight into the temple compound. Then when I see the head monk there, I say, Bante, I just bought a new car. Can you bless the car for me? And guess what Bante said? No. And I said, why? He says, you think a few drops of the water I put from my bowl can make you safe? See, he never thought about it. You think that, oh, he blessed the car, I'll be very safe. He says, if you follow the teachings of the Buddha, your whole life will be safe, regardless of whether you're on a car, whether you're riding a motorbike, or whether you're riding an aeroplane. So this is the way it is. unfortunately for us, we tend to, in the various traditions, we tend to follow the wrong thing. Not to say a wrong thing, but it's very nice to do it. Right? But it brings no good results. So this is the sort of lesson I learned. And I told you, Buddhism is a whole lifetime of learning. You keep on getting experience after experience, and then you know. And the very important thing is to go into this mental training. I'm quite sure you'll be having meditation training in future. So just take it seriously and just go and see what it is like. When you train up, you can see how you react, how you act. Right? And then in the absence of acting and reacting, what happens to the mind? Right? We can always tell you a lot of things. That's through the learned wisdom. But that's not enough. When you start to experience for yourself, then things will be good. And that's the time when you really know the Dharma. Right now, it's just hearing and thinking. Doing is one thing. And in fact, in the Buddha's teaching, doing is the most important. Okay, so the Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Paths, right? And then the four Brahma Viharas. What do you call Brahma Viharas in English? Sublime states of mind. And then, of course, the other things which, in the practice, Buddhist practice, we do generosity. We keep to the ethics, the morality, the precepts, and then we do our personal training. So, in Buddhism, is sila, dana, and bhavana. Bhavana is something which you train yourself up. We can train ourselves up in incorporation, the learning. To do the devotions, right? Bowing to the Buddha and all these things, bow in a nice way, in an understanding way, rather than bowing to the Buddha, okay, tomorrow I'm going to get a lotto. You bow to the Buddha because he's the teacher, he's well respected. So that's a different thing. Then the bhavana includes the meditation, right? And then our prayers and getting together with the other members of the community. So this is basically that's what it's all about, Buddhism. If you want to tie your stone to the tree, think of the tree before you tie the stone. How much milk can you put in? So sometimes, you know, a lot of things we do in the popular Buddhism can sometimes bring about negative results as well. Okay, so it's important that to go, and that's why I want to talk to you about the different traditions of Buddhism. I go back to the beginning. And that's what the earliest stage of Buddhism is like. And in doing so, nobody can tell me that I'm wrong. Because everything, it comes from the scripture. And this scripture was written about 2,100 years ago. Okay, any questions so far before we conclude? Or are you all enlightened? I see a lot of enlightened faces around.
Can you quickly go through what the role of faith?
Faith.
Yeah. Because we get a lot of questions like, oh, what do you believe in as a Buddhist? Or what is your faith in?
What Buddhist, the people ask me what Buddhists believe. I say nothing. You see, the thing is, we are not talking about things happening, right? It's just how we make things happen and what we do after things have happened. So, in other words, now there's another word which we always to be very, very aware of. There's speculation. Right? When you talk about faith, there's a lot of speculation there. You don't know. And for us, when we don't know things, we want to make a big story out of it. Right? So this is human nature. So what you got to do is, the Buddhists will accept, the Buddha taught us, accept the thing now and see how you act and react to it. That's all. Supposing, I can tell you what happens. Now, you study very hard, you put your assignments, everything, and then there's an important exam. And the day you wake up, you've got a very bad headache, very bad cough and all this, and you cannot go to the exam. And then eventually, you know, you don't get a good marks for that and things like that. What happens? You blame fate, don't you? I'm unlucky. Very bad luck. Right? Now, we do not blame luck or no luck. It's just that it happens. Right? And then that thing happens, that is dukkha. You get the point? Right? So when anything which is bad for you to happen, that is dukkha. The dukkha is caused by a lot of factors. Right? When you start to look into that teachings in the mental training and all things, we are talking about factors. I didn't elaborate the thing to you. Right? From A being about B, B being about C, and so on. So when you have all done your things, you've got a great expectation to pass the exam, but on the exam day you're not around there. It could be a lot of factors, because why do you get sick? You've got to take care of it. So there are so many things which we cannot really change. But we can adapt ourselves to it, accept it. It's just like dying. Most of us are scared of death. But we know that there will be death coming. Most of us cannot avoid unhappy situations. But we still got to face unhappy situations. But when you face an unhappy situation, what sort of mind is there? When you face an unhappy situation, you torture yourself, you're suffering. When you face unhappy situations, you don't torture yourself, you got no suffering. So in other words, when you talk about fate and all this thing, it's speculation. How do you know it's fate? And usually, fate is like a lot of people treating God, something to be blamed. You blame God for this, you blame your bad luck for it. The Buddhists try to look at it a slightly different way. So we don't blame it. It's happened. What am I going to do about it? Supposing I go back, my car cannot start. Then I start thinking, I shouldn't have left the lights on. I'm suffering already. So I say, okay, it doesn't start. What am I going to do? I call the NRMA. Simple. And while you're waiting for NRMA, then listen to the radio or just look around the birds and honestly, I am quite happy. But if you are not wise enough to see all these things, you start the car, it won't start. Then start to get angry, get upset, blame this fella, blame that fella, blame the car manufacturer. But nothing happened. The car won't start. So understanding this. Then when you call the NRMA and you keep sitting down there, all the beautiful birds there, the beautiful trees you don't see, you see all the bad things, and tell yourself, I shouldn't have. Then you're suffering. If no, just take it easy, right, and done something, then it's okay. But if you forgot to pay your NRMA dues, you rang out the place, say you haven't paid, then suffer. So these are the sort of things. And that's why we always look into trying to make our life in such a way that we cover almost everything. Right? And try to avoid a lot of things. When you're due for insurance, you know, and all those things, just pay it. If you're not mindful, you forget to pay insurance, then you get a problem. Say, like, you know, one day we were teaching this Buddhism at high school, and my friend who is a fellow teacher, he's a young man, but very, very good in his mind. He asks the kids in the class, he says, if your father give you a brand new, beautiful car, and you park it outside the school, and some idiots came and banged the car, and then it became a write-off, right? What are you going to do? Then one of the boys says, I'm going to kill the guy. The fellow says, you get angry, you kill the guy, it's useless. Because you're killing for just one pile of scrap iron, right? So the best way for you to do is check with your father whether you got insurance or not. You got insurance? Okay, fill up the forms. Same thing when we get accidents and all these things. Be lucky that you're still okay. The other fellow is still okay. Only the car got damaged. Okay, do whatever you've got to do. Right? This is the sort of attitude we have. Simple, day-to-day thing. But instead of doing all these things, we get angry. So try to avoid all these things. You get upset, you get sad and all these things, it's unnecessary. Any more questions? Does it answer your question about fate?
just have a quick question. So basically, you know how it life is characterized by suffering. But the thing is that nowadays we have a lot of, I guess, new belief. And they say that if you look at life from that angle of suffering, then you actually don't have the motivation and the energy to drive. And I think it's, you know, I mean, I believe in mindfulness and all the teaching, but if we actually see life as a way of suffering, then, you know, what's the point of it? I mean, what's the point of living, having that view?
Well, what other ways can we think of? Is life really happy or not? So the thing is, this is the thing I like about Buddhism, right? Personally. It tells you, number one, right? Four Noble Truths. Number one, suffering. Right? Number two, it tells you what happens when, what makes you suffer. But number three and four is very important. Right? This number three and four takes away the pessimism. If you tell you, oh, life is suffering, there's a lot of teaching about that. Life is suffering, and then you can't do anything about it. Then that's being pessimistic. But it says life is suffering, but you can get out of suffering by following this path. It gives you a brightness there. Right? Right.
I may not understand so well about Buddhism, but apparently I think like the method of, you know, get rid of suffering is like, you know, escape reincarnations and other things. But that doesn't really assist life. I mean, people need to live a life and they function throughout the life. I mean, if you escape reincarnation, then that's something too far away and too big.
Yeah, it's not too far away. It's...
I mean, there's no social, positive social impact on the society.
Yes. Now, I tell you, the other alternative is to give you an imagination, right? Make you imagine that life is good. Everything is nice. But how long can I tell you that? Okay? Saying that, okay, you pray to the Buddha, everything will be good for you. You pass your exams, you do everything. Right? But unfortunately, life is not like that. You still, sometimes, you still will fail. You still will get some things like that. Then you say the Buddha doesn't work. Right? So the Buddha give you a really working solution, not a solution which numbs your other, your wisdom. Right? So the wisdom is to understand where this suffering comes from. It's a very important thing. Right? So supposing, like some people say, you come and believe in me, I'm the guru. Huh? I tell you everything, you listen to me, everything will be all right for you. Maybe, you know, it might go when things are all right. But when things are not all right, what happens? So, recently somebody was telling me, he says, when I'm sick, I pray. Right? That's quite common with people who are very religious. When they're sick, they pray. And then, okay. And say, when I pray, my sickness goes away. But this time, when I saw her, he says, I said, what's wrong with you? He said, I got cancer. I said, what happened to your prayers? Doesn't work anymore. You see, like, these are the things. So the Buddha is not saying that you don't get cancer. It's a saying that when you get cancer, how do you react to it? No. The Buddha never say you don't get sick. It's when you get sick, you don't torture yourself with all those thoughts. See that? This is understanding. When you got to face a situation, it gives you the confidence to face the situation. Right? When we get sick, we know that, okay, this is part and parcel of living. Right? And I got to see, when I get pain here, how do I resolve these things? I go and see a doctor, I get painkiller, it's all in within it. Right? Then I say, okay, if I want to pray, I can pray. If the pain goes away, it's all right. Right? That's why sometimes Buddhists do the chanting. When people are sick, right, they go there and chant and chant and chant. Sometimes, you know, the chanting, it works because it takes away your attention on the pain. Right? So this is the way it works sometimes, but not all the time. It doesn't work in all situations. Right? When you talk about the life is suffering, we say life is full of suffering. Right? But we know, understand that what causes suffering, and then how do we get out of the suffering? Getting out of suffering doesn't mean that we don't have that thing. It's just don't be affected by the situation. So supposing I know I got a toothache, what's going to happen? Now, if I, it's true or not, life is suffering when I get a toothache, okay? Then after that, what am I going to do? So, the Buddhists we are looking is, we understand that there's this aching. Right? I go and see a dentist. Try to get rid of it. It's still there, okay. I might take some medicine to stop the pain and all this. Now, this is a very practical method. But even then, if the pain is still there, okay, we understand that this has got to be like that. And accept it. We are not resigned to it. Buddhists, you see, acceptance and to be resigned are two different things. To be resigned to things means you don't do anything at all. I'm sick, okay. I'm sick. The Buddha says I'm sick. It's true. But the Buddha says that you got to get out of that suffering if you can. So go and see a doctor, do all those things. Right? And we are not sitting there to get the suffering. We try to fight the suffering. And
ask the question, is it the suffering there when he thinks it's suffering because he feels it's suffering? But he looked at the suffering, if he can solve it, he solved it. If he cannot, he must not think about it. So I think it's a question, believe as the suffering of the older people, you must solve it. If you can solve it. If you cannot solve it.
Accept it.
So you're happy.
Yeah.
You must be happy all the time. If no...
You see, the thing is, it's what's happening is, when we are suffering, we don't do anything about it. That is real suffering. When you are suffering, you've got to see, where do I get this suffering from? How come it happens that way? And it's all in the teachings. You look at how you react to the suffering. When I see something I don't like, that is suffering already. Because the moment I get the dislike of it is hatred. Then there's suffering. And when you see the thing, keep on looking at the thing, your suffering increases. So supposing I know that this is a thing I know that I don't like it. It doesn't mean that I should like it, but I say, okay, this is just a thing. And then you're right. So in meditation, sometimes you can see those very experienced meditator will tell you, if they sit for long, they get these aches and pains, they stay there. They look at the pain. Look at the pain. Just be with the pain. And sometimes the pain will go away. So this is the way you train yourself when we get into the state of suffering. You know that, okay. This is. But generally, we talk about the suffering which is caused by the mind. The physical suffering, we cannot get rid of it. Always, there'll be a lot of things. Now, supposing I tell you, sit comfortably. You know, sit very nicely. You know, sit down. After half an hour, what happens? You're uncomfortable. Right? Now, it's because you're suffering, therefore you feel uncomfortable. Right? But initially, you're not suffering. You're very supposed to be relaxed and all these things. So, you got to look at it. Is it really because of what caused all these things? Now, we know that we get bored and sitting in the same position, so I must move. And then all these things will come up. As a thought comes out, you want to move. And yet, there's something in you to say, I shouldn't be moving. Especially in meditation. You will see the suffering very clearly. You sit down there, everybody don't move. And after 10 minutes, you feel, I want to scratch. And then you bend, put down, oh, cannot. And after that, you feel that this one, there's a cramp there. I want to stretch my leg. No, cannot. See, that is suffering. So all these things, when we do it, we see it and then try to deal with it. And then as we get in life, we get used to dealing with this sort of suffering. Usually in meditation, I tell them, when you sit down there, you get an itch. You scratch, it's not right. You don't scratch, it's not right. So what are you going to do? Observe that suffering. Not that you're torturing yourself, but no. So eventually, you find for yourself whether you should scratch or you don't scratch. So it's that it just goes on. But when you use the word suffering, that is possibly a very strong word. Like we talk about unsatisfactoriness. That means things like that which is always biting into you. When you're happy, you still got this suffering in you. For example, if tomorrow somebody give you $20,000, what happens? They're happy, isn't it? $20,000. I can do so much things. Then after that, where am I going to keep the $20,000? I'm going to stop the $20,000 from being stolen. All these things will come in. And that is suffering. Now, if you know how to deal with it, you got the money, I want to spend it this way, you do it. Where's the suffering? So in other words, we try not to pile ourselves with unnecessary things. Usually we talk about pain, there's two kinds of pain. One is the actual pain, the other one is imagined pain. When I was young, we used to have mass injection when we got cholera. So what happens was, we all line up, right? The sleeves all roll up, and then the nurse will use a needle, jack, 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 as it goes. And you can see some of the kids, when they got asleep, even before the turn, they start to cry already, because they could feel the pain. So what the Buddha says is, train your mind not to react like that. Okay? No more questions? I think almost time now.
Sorry, just to clear up something for me, can I just ask whether, or can I just present my own understanding and just want to see your reaction to it, that Buddhism, in a sense, is a my understanding of the practical side of Buddhist philosophy is that it's not a philosophy which tells you life's not worth living.
No.
That it tells you that if you do something, mindfulness tells you to do it properly and be aware of the things that could go wrong to prevent it.
Mm.
But statistically, when something does go wrong, which is inevitable, how to deal with it, is that a little bit of basic?
It's accepting of situation. Like when you don't want to accept the situation, you get suffering. There's something which you cannot avoid. Like, you know, you got to. Sometimes when I started, I say you get a lecturer whom you don't like. Right? That is suffering. But it doesn't mean that you go and like him. It's just that look into how much dislike you have. Right? And every time you see the fellow, instead of getting, I don't like you, you say, okay, I stop not to stop all this not liking. So whatever you do, I'm there to learn. And so you put your perspectives in the right order. So we normally let our emotions take over. And if the emotion takes over, a lot of things can go wrong. So in other words, you know, you look at it, you know, just look at the tea. You know, it's tea is tea. Look at the monks, you know, you put food in the monk's bowl, they don't say, I prefer this to that. And they eat. Especially, you know, the very strict monks, they do that. So there's no, our selections and our choices and all these things, we don't really make it a point. Okay, any more comments? Yes?
Well, so Buddhism is quite practical. It's like a practical way of living. So what about the concept of, like, hope or the will of living? Like,
what's it?
Hope. And will of living, does that come to you?
Yeah, we do have hope. But the hope is not unrealistic. Right? Our hope is to get enlightened rather than hope of getting to a nice next world. Right? So that's the more realistic hope is I change myself so that I can live better as a human being. Right? You see, that is the thing of the Buddhist teachings. It's very realistic. If you change yourself, your life is better. And that's very practical because you can't change others. You can't ask, you know, the spirits to help you. But you can do it yourself. When you do it yourself, regardless of what the spirits say, you are still there. It's still yours. All right?
Can I ask this question more about the hope? Hope, is it the future?
Usually, hope is for a better future. But when you're going on an Eightfold Path, you don't even have to hope because it's already there. It makes you... You don't have to hope for something to happen because you're making it happen all the time. Right? As you develop your mindfulness, you start to... You can see your life changing. Instead of getting angry very often, instead of getting angry 200 times a day, you get angry only 199 times a day.
That is improvement. Now you don't have to hope anymore. You know. So when you talk about experiential wisdom, that's what happens. You can see the thing. But it's not something which is through your imagination. You don't say, I hope to have two wings. That's unrealistic imagination. You don't have to hope that I pass my exams.
Because I remember Buddha said that you do anything just now, then look in the future, because you cannot guess the future, and then look at the back, because the back is gone already. So you must now. Is it now? So if I ask you...
Yeah, yeah. So you do whatever you do now affects your next moment. Right? So that's why they talk about all this philosophical thing about now. That's why I didn't touch about it, right? Living in this present moment, because we do not know how to live in the present moment yet until you are really skilled in your meditation. Right? You can see what's happening now. Because when they say now, to us, it's already past. Right? So this is the thing. We're talking about as you develop yourself, you can see the development. One fellow was asking me, how do I know that I'm very good in my meditation? I asked him, do you get angry more often? Said, yeah. I said, yeah. You improve already. Right? Because the mindfulness is, you are mindful now that you get angry. Right? So it's something which is really funny in this sort of things. Right? If you look at it, you might think that's ridiculous, but it's true. So Buddhism is not something like you get struck by lightning. And oh, wow. It's just, it comes slowly. Now, practice in Buddhism is like, it's gradual. It's like standing, you ever stood in a tidal water, go in the sea, where the water goes out and it comes in slowly. So you stand there, you don't even realize the water has come up. Right? You see, it was at your ankle. Then after a while, you find that it's already up to your knees. Right? It comes slowly. Your change comes slowly. Right? If your change is sudden, then I worry about you. Something is wrong up here. It's got to be slow. But how fast you can go, it's up to how much effort you put in. If you don't have energy and effort, you can never improve. Okay? Any more questions? No more. Okay, it's very good. I think I like your questions very much. Because it's typical of the way we got to handle this sort of questions. Because people are saying you are so pessimistic, you're always talking about suffering, which is very true. But the fact is that when we talk about suffering, we give people a way of getting out of suffering. Okay.